are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I feel like we should be giving Chuck more shit for playing in Wins Minus Losses League, but he's old and doesn't know any better. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So I get a free pass because I used to get the stats out of the USA Today for an American League-only league that had the Brewers in it. That's how old I am.
Chuck, did you invent fantasy baseball?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the accent, you don't even need good fantasy advice, but the fact that he does supply that is just a nice little bonus.
Might just randomly generate some stuff next time and read it out and see if anybody notices the difference.
Oh my god.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 126 of the Friends with Fantasy and Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host today, Eli Rosenzweig. Joining me today is Darius Austin and Chuck Anderson. How are you guys doing?
Just fine, man.
Yeah, we don't hear Justin's voice today because he is missing in action right now. I'm guessing he overslept. Hopefully everything's all right on his end. Maybe he'll join us at some point in the podcast if he decides to show up. But for now, we're going to roll without him. We're going to talk about bunch of different guys today. Why don't we just get right into it, because Chuck's running short on time here. So we're going to start with Tom Kohler. He's been really good lately, pretty much been a quality start every time out in his last time, eight times out or so. Chuck, do we believe in this sustaining, or do we just think this is a nice little run for Kohler that'll end real soon?
Well, the bad news is that he started earlier today, and so now he's had two kind of meh starts after a really strong run. I'm starting to think that it's probably just a hot streak that had happened, and I'm using this information on it. My pessimism comes because his good run included these starts: at Atlanta, at home against the Mets, at Minnesota, at San Diego, and at home versus Colorado. Then he gave up four runs in the first inning to the Cubs, but pitched pretty good after that, and then there was today's start. So that would be where the pessimism comes from. If you want to be an optimist about it, I mean, he had a 3.3 ERA in June with nine strikeouts per nine, which is probably, well, you know, nine Ks per nine, which is easily his best run in the bigs. But, you know, he's 30 years old already, you know, and he does have the highest K per nine of his career at 7.61 Ks per nine, which is kind of misleading because that includes the first month and a half where he really wasn't striking anybody out, and he's been striking people out at a K an inning since then. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like I don't trust any starting pitchers right now because they're just all getting shelled as a generality.
Darius, how many team league would you have to be in to run Tom Kohler out there?
I think matchups-wise, 14 and bigger, really. Maybe in a 12 if you're kind of desperate and he's in a nice spot. Like Chuck mentioned, he has had a nice run against a few teams, and a lot of those teams are still in this division, so he'll probably get them again a few times down the stretch, and I think you can use him there. But overall, I don't see a whole lot exciting. He's still walking too many guys, so even though the strikeouts are up, the walks are going to limit his utility somewhat. So I think there's some matchups in play there, and he does pitch in a nice park, but I certainly wouldn't be rostering him full-time in anything like a 12-team league.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on that one. It'd probably have to be a 16-team league for me. He's a whip killer, like you said. He just walks too many guys. The strikeouts are fine, but not good enough to deal with the whip problem. He's a guy that I would like to roll out at home from time to time, but I'm not going to start him on the road unless he's facing a garbage team in a good park. All right, why don't we move on to more of a young guy that's a little bit exciting. He's been pretty good so far, but been up and down this year, but it looks like he might be up to stay. That'd be Max Kepler of the Minnesota Twins. Darius, do you think this is a guy that you need to get on your team for the rest of the year, or do you think a breakout's probably going to be in maybe a year or two down the line?
I like what I've seen so far. He sort of mastered his plate discipline at Dublin AAA last year, and that has somewhat translated. He's got a pretty decent walk rate, especially for a first season. My concern really is with the playing time when Sano gets back. Robbie Grossman's obviously been hitting really well, and he's got an incredible, I think he's at a 400 on base at the moment. And then they've got Buxton as well. So I just question how much playing time he's really going to get there. And also what there is in terms of counting stats in that lineup. When you're hitting sixth and seventh on the Twins, it doesn't really bode that well for your runs and RBIs. So I like what I've seen so far, but for this season, I'm a little dubious that he's going to offer an awful lot to your team.
Yeah, I don't think hitting third or fourth bodes well for your runs or RBIs in this lineup.
Well, exactly.
All right, Chuck, what do you think about this one?
Well, I want to believe that this storyline that's been going on for like the last 4 to 5 years in Minnesota in the outfield is gonna eventually switch, and they're gonna find something that they can hold on to. I mean, you know, we thought Arcia was on his way, and now he's been shipped off. You know, we've thought Buxton was on his way two or three times.
Aaron Hicks.
I mean, you know, the story just keeps going on
and on. Eddie Rosario.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back to Ben Revere if you want. I mean, you know, I mean, they've just it's just been a struggle for them to find steady outfield play. Now, Max Kepler's a really interesting guy. He's the first German-born player to play in the bigs. You know, he's the number 30 prospect in Baseball America. You know, he only had 35 home runs in 7 minor league seasons. You know, a lot of that extra minor league seasoning, I think, was basically because he wasn't going to have quality competition to play if he stayed longer in Germany. You know, last year he really came out, and I think Darius pointed to this. He had 34 doubles and 9 home runs last year. You know, and he is only 23 years old, and he had a sudden jump last year to 19 stolen bases. I guess I'm rooting for the Twins to actually find something, and Max Kepler, you know, is the straw that we're grasping for right now. I mean, he's been the quote unquote fourth outfielder type label for the last, 3 years in the minors. You know, if you listen to prospect analysts, you get a lot of that. But he looks to be exceeding that right now. And he had a huge jump in performance last year. So if you're in trouble in the outfield in a 5 outfielder league in anything that I think is anything 12 outfielders or 12 teams or deeper, I think maybe this is a gamble you want to latch onto, because they need to latch onto something there as well.
It pains me to make this comparison because I'm going to compare him to my favorite non-White Sox player. But do we think it's possible that he becomes kind of a poor man's Christian Yelich the rest of the way? Is that possible?
I do.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right. I just feel like he's going to give you a little bit of all 5 categories. He won't probably be as good as Yelich in maybe any of them, but, you know, he's not going to kill you anywhere. So he's just a nice little guy to plug in, get you a couple steals, a little bit of power. He won't hurt you on average. The runs and RBIs, like you guys said, probably won't be there, but it's possible if the Twins start heating up at some point with Sano coming back at some point.
And there's some roster constructions where you can really use a high floor guy like that, where it seems like with his plate discipline and stuff, he seems like an unlikely candidate to completely fall off the map for a week, you know, and go 0-for or what have you. I think he's going to limit it. He's going to limit the damage.
Why don't we talk about another young guy that we worry a little bit about whether he's going to stay up or down or how much he's going to actually play? That'd be Lucas Giolito of the Nationals. He pitched well in his debut, but only went 4 innings, couldn't even get the win. Chuck, do you think he's going to stay up for a while, or do you think this is going to be up and down kind of thing? What are you looking at for Giolito?
Well, I think they're probably going to give him a pretty long look here, which is something I think is encouraging. I guess I was approaching this more from the point that I think there's so much prospect fatigue for starting pitchers so far this year. You know, the Blake Snell thing hasn't worked out yet. Ian Snell, that's an old time reference.
I love that guy.
For some fantasy people out there. But Blake Snell hasn't worked out. Barrios, however you want to say it, he didn't work out very well. There's been a lot of prospect fatigue, especially for starting pitchers. You know, then we started to get some relief out of Manaea, and then he got sent down. I mean, really, the kid from Detroit, Fulmer is the only kid who's really doing anything. So I think people are going to grasp to this, especially people that like prospects. And I think they're jumping the gun here. I think Forrest pitched tells you that he didn't pitch until he got tired, which the last inning and a half, you know, the first inning and the last inning and a half that a pitcher is in the game, those are generally the innings that they struggle in. And I would also say, you know, 1 strikeout and a 4.16 FIP, you know, really small sample size versus the New York Mets does not exactly cement him in the rotation. I think they're going to give him a look. I really do. I mean, they drafted him with an arm injury, and that's why they got him, I think, in the sandwich pick in 2012. But I really would. I'm holding back. I'm very cautiously optimistic here.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of getting sick of relying on the young kids. We got to learn from our mistakes. I mean, if it's one of those rare situations where he busts out, then, you know, all right, we missed the boat. But I think if you kind of avoid these guys in the long run, you're going to win out in the I don't know, just like he pitched 47 innings last year in Double A. He repeated the league this year, and the walk rate's actually increased by a pretty substantial margin. So that's a little discouraging. He's still only 21. I just don't see him going deep into games, and who knows if he's going to stay up to the majors for the next couple months. I mean, obviously we love him long term, but I just don't think he's worth a roster spot this year unless it's 16 teams or NL only or whatever. What do you think, Darius?
I mean, I would say, first of all, that he only went the four innings because of the rain delay, and they were still being careful with him. But I think there was 45 pitches that he threw. So even if they are holding him to a pretty low pitch count, I can see him pitching maybe a little bit deeper into games than you guys think. My issue is that because he only threw 117 innings last year, where are the Nationals going to cut him short? 140, maybe 150 at tops. So you're looking, I think, at 10 to 12 starts at the most for the entire rest of the season. And that's if they kind of want to push him up past that 140 range. So there's definitely a lot of potential there. We obviously didn't get to see that much this week. And like you said, he's had trouble with control. I think Keith Law mentions that they messed around with delivery a bit in the spring, and it's taken him a while to kind of get over that and rediscover his form from previous years. So I think there's a lot to work out, and certainly I wouldn't expect too much from him this season. Very exciting for the future, but I think there's limited upside. Even if he pitches well, it won't be for very long.
All right, real quick, what do you guys think? Over or under 50 strikeouts the rest of the year for Giolito?
I'll take the over.
I think you're in the right ballpark, but I mean, again, it's kind of like the outfield for the Twins. I want to believe there's going to be some sustaining power here, some of these young pitchers. So I'll take the over, but not by much.
Right, I guess if you're desperate for pitching and trying to make a comeback, maybe this is a guy that you just try to get lucky on. Otherwise, I'm probably just going to avoid it for this year. Speaking of avoiding, I feel like it might be time to avoid Adrian Gonzalez. I've loved him in the past. He's been very consistent, pretty underrated. Just, you know, you plug him in, you get your 275 average with 30 and 100. But that seems to be over now. Darius, do you think this is time that Adrian Gonzalez is going to start declining and we're not going to see the old guy again?
Unfortunately, I think it might be. What is it? Is he 34, 35 now?
Yes, 34.
Yeah, and he's obviously had a couple of points in his career where it looked like maybe he was already starting that decline, and he's managed to bring it around and stabilize somewhat. But this year he's hitting 52% ground balls. That's the same kind of rate as people like DJ LeMahieu and Ichiro, which is not really where you want your power hitters to be. He's had an issue with his back, and I don't think that's really been cleared up yet. I know that Jeff Sullivan at Fangraphs looked at that, and he's sort of not really hitting the same way. He wasn't really hitting fly balls at all earlier in the year, and even though he is now, they're not really going as far as they used to. So I think maybe we just need to get used to Gonzalez having a slugging percentage around 400 instead of the sort of 480 mark it's been the last few years. The good news, I suppose, is that his other stats, his average and his OBP are basically the same. So those skills haven't disappeared, but I think the power might be gone.
Yeah, I mean, just the ground balls that the ground ball rate's like practically tripled. It's insane how many ground balls he's hitting, and the ISO has been plummeted. It's cut in half. So yeah, like you might get the average, but what else are you gonna really get? The problem is that they're in such a bad ballpark that the lineup isn't very good. He's aging. It's kind of a disaster written all over it. What do you think, Chuck?
Well, I think another part of the narrative here is that as these older, bulkier first basemen, as they start to age, you know, you can't fall back on any runs scored because they start to clog up the bases. I mean, you know, he needs to get almost three hits before he can make it in from first base. He's not a good runner, and he never has been, you know. And that's what you're going to see, you know, in aging guys like Prince Fielder, etc. I mean, so if the rest of their skills start to go down, I think the most concerning number I see is 6 home runs and 12 doubles. 12 doubles at this point? I mean, he was a guy who when he wasn't hitting for power earlier in his career, he was like a raking doubles machine. So there's a lot to be worried about. And obviously, you know, you guys have pointed to a lot of the other stuff. The park isn't good. You know, the lineup is awfully young. So I have this idea in my head that, you know, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be up and down. So I'm, you know, I would be avoiding, I would not be betting on a comeback for Adrian Gonzalez this year. And I think there's enough young first basemen I think he's going to slide a long way in drafts going forward.
He's 32nd on the ESPN player rater right now at first, behind luminaries like David Freese, Ryan Rua, Marwin Gonzalez, people.
Hey, Marwin Gonzalez is having a decent year.
Yeah, I know. All right. So I'm going to name a couple guys. Who would you rather have the rest of the year, Adrian Gonzalez or Dae Ho Lee?
I'll still take Adrian Gonzalez.
Yeah, I will take.
But there's a point taken that I had to think about it.
Matt Adams or Adrian Gonzalez?
I'll take Gonzalez still. I've never been much of an Adams fan myself.
I think there's still, if I knew Adams was going to play regularly, I'd take Adams. But, you know, we're going to talk, I think we're going to talk later about some of the playing time issues in St. Louis. So I'll still barely take Adrian Gonzalez.
Do we really have to talk St. Louis, guys? Matt's not on the podcast. I feel like we don't have to.
The less we can talk about the Cardinals, the better for me. You can imagine.
I agree. I don't want to talk about the White Sox. We shouldn't talk about the Cardinals. I don't think Chuck wants to talk about the Brewers. I feel like we should just let Darius talk about whatever he wants to.
Yeah, and we should let him, although he says he's a Giants fan, so I'm not.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure that's sufferable either.
45 minutes of the Giants, anybody?
We're going to talk about the Indians now because they never lose. God damn them. How about Lonnie? Actually, I'm skipping a guy. We're going to stay in that division. We're going to go with Edinson Volquez of the Royals. He just got shellacked a couple times. What was it, 11 runs in one inning?
It was 12, but one of them was unearned, I think.
Oh, man. That's about as bad as it gets. Darius, is he a guy that you want in 16-team leagues, or do you think... the way I look at it is he was getting really lucky these past few years. He was walking everyone, not striking out anybody, and somehow he kept getting away with it. I feel like we overrated him because we saw him pitch well in the playoffs the last couple years, but I think we forget that he's almost 33 now and that he pitched much better than his peripherals would indicate the last couple years. So I think we're finally seeing that lightning won't strike a third time for Volquez. Do you agree with me?
I think there's definitely not a huge amount to make you excited in his profile. He doesn't have a great strikeout-to-walk ratio. You're not going to sit there looking at his page thinking, I've got to have this guy. I think there's still spots, especially in a 16-teamer, in which you might want to use him. And apart from the start, you know, the horrible, I think it was the worst start perhaps ever, I think somebody suggested. Certainly since the Second World War, first time anybody had ever given up 12 runs in an inning. So that was horrible. But his ERA actually only went to 5.15 after that, which is kind of surprising to me. I thought it would be worse. So I'm certainly not going to be rolling Volquez out every time, but he does pitch in a good park. He has got a good ground ball percentage this year, and that Royals defense is still pretty good. So that helps him. And I think, you know, there are places in which you can use him against not very good offenses in that park, but I wouldn't go any further than that.
Chuck?
He has a 1.47 career whip in the American League with a 6.8 K per nine.
Yeah. I don't know how he did it the last couple of years.
I don't either. You know, he's a veteran who can't eat innings. And he can't eat innings because of that whip.
Looks like he's eating a lot of donuts, if you know what I mean.
You know, he wears his hat off to the side. There's just something he's got a stigma to him. There's something I don't like about him.
Oh, so you're saying you don't own Fernando Rodney? Because you're missing out on a great year if you don't draft players with hats on the side.
I owned Fernando Rodney, and when he was in his save drought, I switched to Will Harris, so I'm not exactly sure I played that right either. But Edinson Volquez is a guy that he's the kind of veteran that I would take a gamble on almost any young kid who's got some upside. Because I'm going to ask the question, like, generally kidding, generally speaking, that young player is going to have some swings, and he might hurt you some more in ERA than Volk has, but he's going to have more strikeouts. And is the WHIP going to be any worse? It's kind of hard to imagine that a young player could stay in the bigs with a WHIP worse than Volk has is. So I can't imagine a league where I would have any interest in Edinson Volquez at this point. The Kansas City model, the we're going to get guys to pitch us through the fifth inning into the sixth, and then we're going to use these relief pitchers. I've always thought that it had a very, very narrow window. Like it had a very easy chance to get broken. And this year is kind of showing us how easily shattered this mold can be, which has to scare teams like the Yankees and other teams that tried to build around the same model. And Edinson Volquez won't be on another fantasy team for me while I'm alive.
Wow, tough crowd. All right, I agree with you guys. All right, I'm going to make an executive decision here. We've talked about too much garbage lately. I need to get excited about a player. I know we have Chisenhall next. We're going to skip him for now. Let's just jump to a player that we can actually get excited about. Chris Bryant. Top three third base for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's, you know, a genuine conversation that he could be number one by the end of the season if he keeps hitting like this.
Somehow Eduardo Nunez is ranked higher than him. What is wrong with the world?
I still can't believe it every time. I keep thinking that somebody's made an error on the leaderboards or something every time I see Nunez's name. It doesn't really make any sense.
Maybe he hacked the page or something. Yeah, I'm a little confused as to why Justin even put Chris Bryant on the show sheet. I know he just had one of the best games that we'll ever get to see, but I mean,
maybe he just wanted to talk about how good that game was.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, just Chris Bryant he's a fucking stud, man.
I think you're understating his upside. I think it's conceivable that next year before drafts, people are talking about him as a top three or four pick overall. You know, because the plate discipline has taken such a huge step forward. You know, he's obviously in a very good lineup to hit in. He's obviously really young. And a lot of the reasons that we pushed Giancarlo Stanton so far up draft boards in recent years, to me, you know, Chris Bryant is one of those guys that at some point in his career, he's going to get hot and he's going to hit 50 home runs. And that's not that easy to come by in this day and age. So I think you're understating his upside. And I despise the Cubs in a rivalry kind of way like I'm supposed to. So for me to say that means that he's overcome a lot of cynicism on my part, and he's a beast. The way he plays all over the diamond, you know, like in draft and hole leagues next year, for him to be third base and outfield eligible and to have the potential for the numbers that he has, if he lasts past the fifth or sixth pick in any of those drafts next year, I'm going to be surprised.
All right, since we all love Bryant, clearly, why don't we talk about him in a dynasty perspective? I'm going to give you a couple third basemen. You got to tell me if you're starting a team from scratch, who you'd rather have moving forward. Chris Bryant or Nolan Arenado?
Oh. how can you go wrong here? You know, they've both taken huge steps forward in their hitting this year. The positional eligibility, it kind of depends on the format of the league for me, if the positional eligibility is going to matter in the next couple of years or not for Bryant, because the Colorado factor really adds into Arenado for me, because it's such a great place to hit. So I'm going to say in most instances, I'm still, and this is really high praise, I'm still going to take Bryant.
Darius?
It's really close for me. I think, you know, Coors obviously gives Arenado a boost, even though Wrigley's a nice place to hit. I'm kind of a guy, I love guys who don't strike out, and Arenado is almost striking out as often as he walks this season. So I think I might just take Arenado, but it's really, really close. And if you ask me tomorrow, I might say Bryant.
I'm guessing you guys are both taking Bryant over Donaldson then?
In a dynasty, I think so. I mean, what, Donaldson is he's 30 now?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so I think, you know, just for that, if nothing else, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the harder one for me is that I think I would take, you know, and obviously I don't know what how many times Machado's probably going to be eligible at third next year as well, because I think he's going to play enough third with Hardy back. I think Arenado is the one that I would take in front of him because of the shortstop eligibility.
Wait, where are you ranking Machado among these three?
I would rather have Machado.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, yeah. Darius, what are you saying? Machado 1, maybe Brian 2, Arenado 3, or switch those two?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I can't really decide. I'm saying Arenado over Bryant for now, but they're basically, you know, 2A and 2B for me. But yeah, Machado first.
All right, why don't we go back to Lonnie Chisenhall? We don't want to let, you know, forget about him.
What a swing. What a swing we've made.
Yes. Yeah, a little bit of a downgrade at third base. Do we even think, like, I know Chisenhall's played pretty well lately, but I just feel like with the Indians, you know, in a real contention for a title here, that they're going to want to make an upgrade. I know he's a versatile guy. He can play some third. He can play some outfield. But I just feel like his playing time might go down a little bit in the second half. Do you guys agree with that?
I mean, yeah, you have to, because he's only had 29 at-bats against lefties all year. So, I mean, you know, if anybody cuts into any of his time versus righties, that's going to be a significant cut.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what's happening with Brantley? But they've got Zimmer and Frazier in the minors, both hitting well. I'm quite impressed by the improvements he's made. He's hitting a lot of line drives. He's not popping up like he was last season. I think he's being more selective at the plate. But it's still really hard to see him get double-digit homers or steals. Maybe over the course of a full season, he could hit 10 or 11 homers. But that's not really something to get excited about fantasy-wise. He's definitely a valuable piece for them. But I agree with you. I think there's definitely a distinct possibility of even more reduction in his playing time. And I don't think there's a whole lot there, even if he gets to play full time in a fantasy sense.
Yeah, the way I look at it, he's just a guy that if one of your main guys goes down, you just pick up Chisenhall for 2 weeks and he'll hold down the fort. But once your guy gets back, you just cut Chisenhall. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, why don't we move on to Tanner Roark of the Nationals. What do you guys view him the right? I know he's been pretty good this year, but do you think that's going to continue, or do you think Giolito coming up is going to hurt him? What's going to happen with Roark the rest of the way?
Well, I think, you know, I don't think he's quite as good as he's been this year. But I also think that in a fantasy sense, you have very little options of what you can do with him. He's probably owned everywhere because he's been that good. But he had a terrible stint last year in the bullpen that he's spoken openly about. I've heard interviews with him, and I've heard the broadcasters for the Nationals explain it, that when he was in the bullpen and then tried to make those 12 starts last year, that he was just so messed up. And so he's got that one really bad year of stats in the middle of, you know, otherwise two really good years. So I don't think you're going to convince anybody. You know, I made this example in my head when I was thinking about it. If somebody says, well, I'll trade you Tanner Roark for Ryan Braun, your first instinct is going to be, well, there's no way that I'm going to take Tanner Roark for Ryan Braun. But if you took that middle year out, you'd think to yourself, boy, if I really needed pitching, this could be something I really need to look at. You know, so, and the oddest thing about Tanner Roark, not only is he having a great year, but he's allowing the highest BABIP that he's ever allowed in his career right now. So he's getting unlucky and he's dominating everyone. But I don't think that that's what his market value is amongst the fantasy public, despite that.
I don't know what I'm more surprised about here. The BABIP pronunciation instead of BABIP, or the Tanner Roark for Ryan Braun trade mention. I did not see that coming. Darius, how do you pronounce BABIP?
Yeah, BABIP. Yeah, definitely.
I guess there's no wrong way. It's just I just want to make fun of Chuck, honestly.
It's not that hard to do. I'm a likely target.
Usually I'm the one who's the butt of all jokes, but since I'm hosting, I'm kind of in control here. So, Darius, what do you think about Roark the rest of the way?
I kind of agree in the sense that it's difficult to sell him for something. If you can get somebody to buy him as kind of a, you know, slightly below 3 ERA pitcher, then maybe you can get something decent for him. But my guess is most people are going to see the name and they're not going to give you what he's actually worth. So you're better off hanging on to him. In terms of how he's pitching this season, I think it's relatively sustainable. The ERA is maybe a little bit on the low side, but I think he's got a good pitch mix. He's really good at locating his pitches. He throws four, and they're all above average by the Fangraphs pitch values this season. So I think he's using them all well, and he seems to have that Aaron Nola type thing of being able to throw a lot of pitches in the strike zone without people actually swinging at them. So there's obviously something he's doing that's deceptive to hitters, and that seems to have been sustained over quite a long period of time now. So I think it's relatively sustainable, and unless you can really get people to believe that ERA is what his talent level is, then you're probably going to just hang on to him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think a lot of people are going to be buying it, but maybe they should. I mean, if you look at his career numbers, I mean, he's pitching right around his career ERA right now. He's a 3 ERA guy, 1.15 whip. The thing that's really encouraging to me is the big uptick in strikeouts, because before, I don't think a lot of us believed in Roark the last couple of years, but the fact that he's striking out guys more now makes me believe that, you know what, this guy is pretty good. So he's a guy that I wouldn't mind owning in a lot of leagues. Another pitcher that we're definitely going to want to be owning, no matter how small the league, and that'd be Carlos Carrasco of the Indians. Where do you guys view him? The top 20 guy the rest of the way? Or how many different – how do you guys rank your Cleveland Indians pitchers right now? Kluber, Carrasco, and Salazar. And I guess Bauer's in the discussion kind of too. Chuck, why don't we start with you? Where do you rank these four guys?
I'm a Klubot guy, which I do like. I do like his nickname as well. I'm a Klubot guy. I am also a Carrasco guy, but more so a Kluber guy. So I would put Kluber ahead, and still by quite a bit. And then after that, I would go with Carrasco. Not that I don't like him, because I do. I think Corey Kluber is a top 5 or 6 guy, especially with the injury concerns that we have atop the top tier of pitching right now. You know, both Kershaw getting looked into and Strasburg maybe coming back this week, etc. and so forth. So I'm really high on Kluber. I think top 20 might be even selling Carrasco short right now because of the incredible upside with his strikeouts and his peripherals. So we've been waiting a long time for those peripherals to equal results. And right now, with this Indians hot streak, we're seeing those peripherals meet the results that we want. So I think he's more like a top 15 guy right now.
You agree with that, Darius?
Yeah, I think back end of the top 15, maybe 15 to 20 range for me. The main concern I have is that the strikeouts don't quite seem to be there this season, which, you know, it's a small thing to complain about, really. He's still got a great strikeout to walk ratio, and obviously the results have been really good. It's just that his strikeouts are kind of in the 8 per 9 range this year. And for your elite starting pitchers, you kind of want that strikeout per inning or more if you can. So I go Kluber, Carrasco, Salazar, Bauer as well. But other than that, what's not to like? The other really good thing about Cleveland these days is they've actually got great defense in that infield. You know, when you've got Lindor playing shortstop, it can never be a bad thing for a guy with a ground ball percentage above 50. So I think it's looking really good for Carrasco's future.
Man, can I just say, screw the Indians? I mean, are we really – you guys think – I mean, they have 3 top 15 guys right now. And Bauer's been incredible. I think Bauer's got, what, 7 straight quality starts or something like that?
Well, Eli, yeah. The only thing I would say is that you're saying screw the Indians and you're pointing out their pitching. If someone had told me that their offense was going to be this good without Brantley, I would have told them that they were on a deadly dose of crack, because I didn't see all these people having good years at once offensively for them. That's what really, really stuns me. I mean, you know, they're a converted catcher at first base who's been up and down and not so good. Nobody likes Jason Kipnis, by the way, and I own Jason Kipnis in a lot of places because people just dumped on him like he was a 15 to 20 second baseman in the leagues that I drafted in. And so I scooped him up, and, you know, he's not phenomenal, but he's certainly not hurting them at all in any way, shape or form. And I'm stunned at how good their offense is right now. That's what really stuns me the most about the Indians. Mike Napoli, I had him in the grave.
Well, you should have known that this offense was going to be good. But they got Lonnie Chisenhall.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, the funny thing is if they were going to bounce back, I would have thought their catcher was going to have a good year. And he's had some power. But other than that, he's been pretty terrible.
Yes. If you're playing DFS, never, under any circumstance, play Yan Gomes against a righty. Against a lefty, you can roll him out there. But my God, is he terrible against righties. I wanted to mention real quick, you guys both had Carrasco above Salazar. I think you guys are a little crazy. not entirely crazy, but Carrasco got hurt. I know he's been good since he came back, but Salazar, I feel like you guys are underrating Salazar a little bit here. I know he's Salazar's walking a lot of guys, but he does not give up hits, and he's striking out people all over the place.
I think, for me, Salazar and Carrasco, that like there's Kluber and then a bit of a gap for me, and Salazar and Carrasco are pretty close, so I wasn't trying to say that I don't like Salazar.
Yeah,
I just have a little bit less trust in him, and I know I listened to Doug on the main pod yesterday, and he was sort of talking about how Salazar doesn't quite seem to always have consistent mechanics in his delivery, and so sometimes he can just sort of lose it for a few starts, and that still gives me a little bit of pause as to whether he can really be that elite guy that you can trust every time out.
Well, but I suppose it makes sense to listen to Doug when it comes to pitching over me, so
yeah, I don't know any mechanics, but if Doug says it, then I believe him.
Yep, so. Amen to that.
Well, I'm differentiating. I'm making a slight differentiation, and I really like Salazar as well. And I think he's a guy who almost gets hidden on this pitching staff. Yeah. So he's a guy who could be a great draft value next year. But the thing that I probably shouldn't be differentiating the two on is that, to me, Carrasco has a longer history of solid peripherals. I know that history is peripherals, not results. And Salazar really hasn't put a full season together yet. And so, you know, that's what I'm differentiating upon at the moment. But I wouldn't blame anybody if they liked Salazar more than Carrasco.
All right, why don't we move on to a really old infielder. Without looking, if you guys don't know, how old do you think Johnny Peralta is?
35?
Chuck, do you have a guess?
I did look earlier today, but before that, I was thinking that he was 32 or 33, so I was wrong.
Man, I would have guessed like 38. I swear to God, this guy's been in the majors for like 70 years. So I'm not surprised he's been terrible this year, because he's 34. Shortstops don't age well. I know Peralta's been good in the years past, but he was coming off a pretty substantial injury, and I was going to be pretty surprised if he had a nice season. Do you guys think that the shittiness is going to continue with Peralta, and that he's going to lose some playing time, or do you think he's going to bounce back and kind of be the old Johnny Peralta that we've come to know and maybe love? Darius, why don't we start with you?
I think obviously he hasn't really played very much at all yet this year. He's got a very low BABIP, so I think that's partly to blame for his poor average. And the power seems to be still there. He's had two homers and six doubles through his first 76 plate appearances. So I don't think it's going to be as terrible as his line currently looks at the end of the season. You're not really going to get anything in terms of steals, obviously, but I think for a middle infielder, you know, he's probably still like a maybe 15 homer type guy, and that's still valuable. But yeah, at that age, there's maybe not a whole lot left in the tank.
Chuck?
Well, I mean, I think the added question now this year that he didn't have in years past is the added question is playing time now. You know, with a combination of Aledmys Diaz, who's kind of having a roller coaster season, and a combination of Jed Jericho, they don't have a need per se to have him in the lineup every day. And so, and you also have to think at some point they have to start looking a little bit towards the future on their roster. I mean, Jason Hayward openly ripped them apart for, not having a youth movement.
Jason Hayward should rip himself apart.
Yeah, Jason Hayward's swing that takes about 10 seconds after he starts it to actually reach the home plate. I agree with you completely. I think he's one of the most overrated players in the majors. But my point is that I think there's playing time issues for Johnny Peralta going forward. And he was not. I mean, he's a little bulky for a shortstop, and he wasn't a great defender to start with, which is odd to put in this context, because I've seen Aledmys Diaz look like a hockey goalie, kicking stuff off his glove and everything else at shortstop. So he's not a good defender either.
Kick save and a beauty.
Exactly. But my point is I don't see what St. Louis's main push is to give Johnny Peralta a lot of playing time right now, when Aledmys Diaz is hitting easily as well as him, if not better, at almost every point.
I just got a text from Matt, and he said he's got Johnny Peralta ranked in between Carlos Correa and Corey Seager. Can we comment on this? I'm just kidding. I don't think Matt's even that delusional, but yeah, it's possible. All right, why don't we talk about a guy that's even worse than Peralta? Maybe I know we didn't know a lot about this guy coming into the season, but for me, he might be the most disappointing player in fantasy. Maybe that's because I have a lot invested in him in AL only, and I spent a lot of my fab money on him in my three-sport league because we didn't draft him last year. That'd be Byung-ho Park of the Minnesota Twins. I mean, this guy, I mean, he's got legitimate power. His homers go a long way, but it's either a home run or nothing with this guy. He can't hit for average. He's not going to score runs in that shitty offense. He's not going to drive runs in that shitty offense. He's slow as hell, so he's a homer or a single. What do you guys think? Do you think a bounce back's coming in the second half as he adjusts to the league, or do you think this is kind of a bad play by Minnesota picking this guy up? Darius, why don't we start with you?
I think the thing for me is he basically wants to be Chris Carter. Like, almost being Chris Carter would be better, which is not a great thing to say. Obviously, Chris Carter has had productive seasons, but right now he looks like an absolutely disastrous Chris Carter season. He just doesn't make contact with the ball very often. He's striking out a third of the time, but he's not walking the kind of amount that you would expect from this profile player. He's three true outcomes, but you know, one of the undesirable outcomes is far outweighing the other two. I'd like, you know, his BABIP is pretty low, so maybe the average is going to come up a little bit. But he's not even really, I've been looking at the StatCast data as well, and he's not hitting the ball that hard. It's not like his exit velocity is off the charts when he does make contact, as I kind of expected it would be. So yeah, I kind of agree that it's been a little bit disappointing. I think there's some production to be had there in the power department, but that's basically all you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, are there any positive signs with him? Like, it's just, there's nothing to hold your hat on with this guy.
Yeah, I don't see, you know, where it's coming from. I don't see that he's adjusting and starting to learn the league better and make more contact. That doesn't seem to be happening to me.
Yeah, I just cut him in my 14-team three-sport league. He's just, and I have first base problems out of control, and I couldn't hold on to this guy anymore. He's just killing me. Chuck, do you see any reason for optimism?
You know, I am such a light of optimism on this show. I mean, this is what I am to begin with. So I'm going to say this, okay? If you had him in a dynasty league, there's the reason for optimism is this, because Paul Molitor has openly talked about demoting him, okay? And really, he has almost, from what we can tell, he has no chance of fixing this train wreck followed by a chemical spill on the major league roster. So the optimism comes in as if he gets sent down and accepts the assignment, perhaps he will switch his approach at some level. And then maybe he has some usefulness in the future, but a guy hitting in the 190s, 12 home runs, plays in, you know, a really spacious park. You know, it's been abysmal. And this is a mea culpa because I was a believer.
Yeah, me too.
I was a believer in Byung-ho Park. I thought, you know, people talked about the athleticism of his swing. I thought he had a chance to hit for batting average.
Whoops.
Boy, that makes me sound like a moron, doesn't it? But that's the optimism. If you own him right now and you're going to hold on to him, pray that he gets demoted, because that's the only thing that can help.
I think you're right. I just feel like the moral of this story is don't trust the Twins, no matter what they do. Before, I thought it was just never trust their pitching, but now I just don't trust their offense unless their name is Eduardo Nunez, because then you know you can roll with him as the number one shortstop on the player writer. It's completely crazy what the hell is going on with the Twins this year. I knew they'd suck, but this is at least Dozier, on the bright side, Dozier is heating up like a motherfucker right now. He is on fire. So that's something positive in Minnesota. All right, why don't we move on to a nice ray of light, and that'd be Jose Quintana. I didn't even put him on the show sheet, so this is not on me. Blame Justin. But can we just talk about how great Jose Quintana's been this year? Chuck, gush about my second favorite pitcher in Chicago.
I think you're putting me on the spot here because you know I'm going to fall short of your expectations. I like Jose Quintana. I really do. And I love the fact that he's consistently underrated. So he's a really good draft value. And I mean a really good draft value. You think you're in trouble, you need a stabilizer, you need somebody who's going to help you. I think Jose Quintana is it. The things I don't like about Jose Quintana is I don't want to see that perception change so much that he's changed into a top 25 or top 30 guy.
I don't think that's going to happen because Chris Sale doesn't even get enough attention. No one gives a rat's ass about the White Sox, not even 90% of people who live in Chicago. All Chicago players go under the radar, and that's not just me complaining because I'm a White Sox fan, but no one gives a shit. That's just, no one cares.
The Don't you think? I mean, some of it comes down to the home park being pretty easy to hit in. I think some of it comes down to that. And a lot of it, the rest of it comes down to the fact that, you know, I'm the last person who can say anything because my Brewers have never won a World Series. But since the White Sox have won the World Series, they've been consistently disappointing as a team, especially last year. So I think that's a lot of what adds to him be consistently being a good draft value. You know, I've seen people get overly excited when he has a run and talk about his value versus Steven Strasburg and, you know, guys like this. And as much as I like the kind of pitcher Quintana is and how he, you know, he's a smart pitcher who knows how to pitch, I don't think he has the stuff to be an elite pitcher. I just don't. I think he's an incredible asset in real life baseball. He's a very good asset in fantasy, but I don't think he'll ever be a stud.
All right. Obviously, your opinion is stupid. Darius, well, what do you think about Quintana? And be careful what you say.
I think I'm a little more positive than Chuck. What's really nice about Quintana is he just sort of seems to learn a little bit extra every year. Something improves a little bit, and he just keeps on getting slightly better, and as you say, nobody notices, so he's a great value. I don't know if Justin put him on here because he had that sort of disastrous sick walk game against the Red Sox.
Yeah, that was a complete aberration. This guy never walks anybody for the most part.
Yeah, and I did note that Deonna Navarro is just a disaster at framing. I went and looked him up on the BP catcher stats, and he is last in baseball. I think even including the minor leagues, he's the worst framer in all of baseball this season.
Maybe the White Sox can trade back for AJ Pierzynski.
That would be an improvement. But yeah, I really like Quintana. I think he's right on the borderline. Certainly, I haven't talked about CFIP on here before, but something I've written about a couple of times on the site. It's a stat that Baseball Prospectus do that kind of takes everything into account, you know, the batter, the pitcher, the umpire, the catcher, all that kind of thing. And Quintana's CFIP is 75, which is actually right behind Sale and Kluber and the genius that is Rich Hill. It's better than guys like Strasburg. So he's right up there in like the top 10 pitchers by CFIP. And, you know, if he keeps getting a little bit better every season, then maybe he will actually be able to vote himself into the elite tier with another little adjustment next year. So, I love Quintana.
Yeah, another thing that makes him get overlooked is that he's got the worst luck I've ever seen in my life. I mean, this is four straight years now of really good pitching and just getting boned with no decision after no decision. So 2013 to 2015, it's about as most consistent as it gets. 200 innings, 200 innings, 206 innings. 3.51 ERA, 3.32 ERA, 3.36 ERA. 1.22 whip, 1.24 whip, 1.27 whip. 164 Ks, 178 Ks, 177 Ks. 9 wins, 9 wins, 9 wins. 9-7, 9-11, 9-10. This year, he's taken a step up. He's on pace for 200 strikeouts, 200 innings, a 3.18 ERA, a 1.16 whip, all career highs. And he's 5-8. Like, this guy can't get a goddamn break. And I think in a quality start league, like, he's a legit top 15 option. Like, I know he won't beat that, and there's not a lot, ton of upside on that front, but, like, you're not going to get burned by him ever. Maybe we need to stop playing wins leagues. I like wins leagues because I like to populate my pitching staff with high leverage relievers to get some cheap wins and help in ERA and whip. But I'm starting to think that wins are not the way to go. It's just so unfair. It's not a good measure whatsoever. What do you guys think on that?
Yeah, I hardly have any leagues left that have wins, actually. The vast majority of mine are quality starts. So I definitely agree. It's much better. And you get so many fewer frustrating moments, like with guys like Quintana, who are great pitchers and never get the decisions they deserve.
Well, I'm gonna be on an island because that's kind of where I live, I guess. it's not the best league that I'm in is a wins minus losses league, which I really really enjoy a lot.
That's even just worse.
the reason that I like wins minus losses, and you know, I can handle the fact that I'm going to get bombarded here. But the reason that I like wins minus losses is because then it gives you a reason to watch the entire game. And there's times that you're actually hoping that your pitcher gets off the hook for the loss, which to me, part of the massive enjoyment of fantasy baseball is, you know, having as much time as you can during games, watching them for, you know, how it adds to your results for your teams, makes watching baseball even more enjoyable for me. I don't think I'm not a fan of quality start leagues.
It's not as much fun, but it's probably more fair.
Yeah, it's
the question here, isn't it? I mean, you know, you're talking about two things, and like you just said, Chuck, you're not talking about what's more fair or statistically sensible. You're talking about when you're watching baseball, what's going to make you have more fun.
There's no doubt about it. Wins is not a fair statistic. You know, saves is not a fair statistic. Roberto Hernandez for the Rays 1 year, they won, they won like 50 games and he had like 38 saves. I mean, you know, saves and wins are not in any way, shape or form, a good measure of pitcher ability by any means, but you know, it's something that we can track and it's something that adds to the value of us watching the games. And so I'm a little more for them sticking around than most people are within this industry.
I feel like we should be giving Chuck more shit for playing in wins minus losses league, but he's old and doesn't know any better.
Is that so? I get a free pass because I used to get the stats out of the USA Today. When in my first league, I used to take the stats out of the USA Today every Wednesday for an American League only league that had the Brewers in it. That's how old I am.
Chuck, did you invent fantasy baseball?
I was around the invention of it.
I didn't realize we had such a legend on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm sure people feel like I'm either liked or hated. I put it this way: I would rather leave a bad impression than no impression, because you know if you leave no impression, then you're not remembered at all. So we've got that going for us. And before we take off, I do want to say one thing for certain: is that I really, really enjoy having Darius on the show.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
And you know his it sort of makes my whole week hearing the vocal inflection and the texture that he adds to the show, both with not just his accent but with the way he approaches fantasy is very refreshing.
Yeah, I was gonna say with the accent you don't even need good fantasy advice, but the fact that he does supply that, it's just a nice little bonus.
Oh God,
I might
yes.
Randomly generate some stuff next time and read it out and see if anybody notices the difference.
Oh my God, that's a brilliant idea.
But seriously, no, thank you guys. It's great to be on. I really enjoyed doing it, and it's nice to have a regular spot to talk about it. So the funny thing is, I really don't have a very strong accent. Like in the UK, you wouldn't be able to tell where I was from. There are lots of, you know, really strong regional accents, and I don't really have one of them. So it's quite funny whenever I talk to Americans and they're like, oh, your British accent is great. And I never even think of myself as having an accent. So it's always a reminder.
Do you guys like our accents as much as we like yours? Probably not, right?
I think, it varies a lot. I think the Bostonian one annoys people.
So basically you hate me?
No, it's like more extreme than that. Yeah. Do you know the chef, Lloyd Grossman?
No.
he did a lot of TV stuff over here, and so like everybody's association with Boston accents was like this super nasal. If you Google Lloyd Grossman, you'll see it's like really posh, extreme nasal Boston style accent.
I was hoping I could move there and maybe the girls would like me, because they don't like me in the United States, I'll be honest.
But I don't think generally we have a strong feeling either way for the majority of American accents.
All right.
I think people quite like the deep South drawl. That gets people quite a lot. I think people like that.
Yeah, I always wanted a Southern belle, but we got to stop talking about me and the ladies. That'll wrap it us up. Why don't you tell us where we can find you on Twitter and what you're working on, Darius?
So I'm on Twitter at DariusA64. I've got something planned, sort of a follow-up to my trade piece I did last time for FWFB, and I'm also going to do something over at Banish to the Pen. They were talking the other day about what if we could only watch one inning of a game, which inning would it be? So I've
in
got
baseball little... history. Oh man,
yeah.
What are some of the ideas that came off the top of your head?
Well, I'm kind of thinking about, I'm going to do a bit of play indexing and look at the stats for it, but then maybe go through and see some of the key moments. What would you have seen if you'd only watched this inning, or what would you have missed if you hadn't watched these other innings? That kind of thing.
I know this might be recency bias, but the seventh inning of the Rangers Blue Jays series is
as good as my first thought.
Yeah, I mean that was I remember where I was when I watched that one. Chuck, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at just chucking it. And I just do some rankings and some stuff for the site, and I'm gonna challenge our friend Darius, and I don't want him to do it this week. But one of my favorite episodes ever of of David Letterman, and this will also age me.
I was just about to say.
with his top 10 list, he had James Earl Jones on one time saying words that he thought would sound really cool said by James Earl Jones. That was the top 10 list. And the number one word was verisimilitude, said by verisimilitude. So maybe next week we can get Darius to say verisimilitude to even further add to the joy of our Wednesday afternoon meetings.
Okay.
Darius isn't a puppet, all right?
I hope he's not offended by that.
Not at all. I'll find one of the players that I can work it into the discussion on and just drop it at a random point.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you, sir.
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. That would be really helpful. Help us move up the rankings. More people can find us. You know the deal with that. And we'd like to thank Laura Michaels and the Biletones for providing our theme music. And that'll do it for us on Thursday. Thank you, guys.